Hello, everyone. Welcome to Struggle Session.
Welcome to the Halt and Catch Fire Fest edition of Struggle Session.
Let me ask you a question. What do you do when you combine the hottest podcast in all of pop culture with the most innovative convention going on today? I mean, all those other conventions are up there taking place in meat space. Ugh. Where there's nothing but COVID and disease.
Terrible.
Out there.
Very terrible, irresponsible. Awful.
But what you get here, you have two innovators at the top. You know, Kate and Joan. Mm-hmm. Two women with such vision. You have, you know, that ass kicker YB who you just saw put on that wonderful trivia show. Mm-hmm. You know, in there making the deals. They were able to get us. They were able to get Struggle Session for this wonderful show. And it was a very tense negotiation, Jack, because, you know, it was always our dream to appear on Halt and Catch Fire Fest, mm-hmm. the wonderful convention for the deeply, deeply underappreciated show, Halt and Catch Fire, up from AMC. But there was a slight problem that neither of us had watched Halt and Catch Fire.
Big problem. Yeah. You know, neither of us had caught it. So, you know, that was kind of like an issue for appearing at this particular fest, which is entirely about this show.
Yeah. But after some very, very tense negotiations, you know, we held the line, we were able to come to a deal. And that's where our guests come in, because we told Joan and Kate that the only way we're doing this, if we can bring in some experts mm-hmm. who have watched some of the show and can do most of the work for us.
That's right.
And, you know, it took a lot to get these guests on, because first up, we have the host of Useful Idiots podcast, as well as a show by her own namesake. She was just doing a stream. I kid you not. The stream she was just on was about freeing Julian Assange, okay? This is a heavy hitter in the world of politics, in the world of media. You've seen her all over on national TV. Kay Halper, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, of course.
On Struggle Session at FireCon. Katie, I brought you in. You had not watched Halt and Catch Fire yet either, but you were excited for it.
I was. I needed a new show, and it was everything I hoped it would be, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you texted me. I wasn't sure if you would like it or not, but you texted me. It's like, oh, yeah, I actually really like this. And I'm like, oh, I'm not imposing on you by asking you to watch all this TV within a week for the show. Really, really, really great. And then we needed someone who had not only seen every episode of this show, but was simply an expert at television. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, one of the probably the only person in the world who seems to get smarter from watching TV. It's like the Riddler from Batman Forever, like that thing where it beamed, where he uses the TV to beam intelligence into his head. Lenny Burnham, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming back to Struggle Session. I saw that you were a Halt and Catch Fire fan. And that is one of the reasons why I wanted to do this convention. Because if you think the show is good, I know it's good.
Thank you.
So we're going to get into it. We didn't get to watch all of it. Katie, I know you watched all of season one. Is that correct?
I watched the entire, every single episode ever created for season one.
Of the season one, sure.
Of season one,
yes, yes, yes. I mean, in fact, if we were in the UK, you could say you watched the entire series, the first series.
Oh, yeah, you watched the first series.
I watched the first series, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also have, and Jack, yes. I took season two. I took the second season, which I really enjoyed. And thankfully, YB had watched the show, and I didn't realize I had mostly watched all of it. Most of my TV viewing is just over YB's shoulder while I'm like playing Switch or playing on my phone. So I had actually mostly seen everything, but I actually have not seen season one, but I watched all of season two and season three and season four. I got now, Jack, I did message you the other day. I was like, could you get season three? Were you able to get season three for me?
So I'll tell you what, Leslie, you emailed very, very studiously. You sent an email to everybody sort of laying out exactly what everybody needs to watch. And, you know, everything for this, for, you know, for what we're going to do here for Halt and Catch Fire Con. That was, you know, with a respectable amount of time and all that. The biggest issue is that I don't check my emails. I don't do it. I've signed off of it all together, and I don't look at them because it's just stressful. And I don't like the bold stuff. It's too much bold in your emails and stuff like that. So I got the heads up and reminder from you. I think it was yesterday that I was to watch all of season three. And I'll tell you what, folks, I did watch season three in a very special new method that I figured out that I think will only work for prestige shows. Now, listen, I do want to say this. I'm here at this convention. I actually, after watching season three, even with this method, do really want to watch the show. You know, I think that the show is really cool. But what I did was, and this works, and I think it will only work for prestige television shows, is I turned the subtitles on and was very, 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 I used the skip ahead 10 seconds method over and over and over again. And I'll tell you what, it's prestige TV. So there's a lot of times when I would skip ahead like 40 seconds and it would just be like someone being sad. And 40 seconds later, they were just still being sad. I fully can tell you every point of the plot of season three of Halt and Catch Fire. I saw every moment of it, and I will go watch the full show after this.
Jack,
but it's a method that works.
Oh, see, Jack, we have some detractors in the chat, but see, these are like the people who are always, you know, slagging off Joe, who don't see his vision. Jack, you innovated. You invented a new way to watch TV, and Jack, I'm very excited about what we can possibly do with this. We could probably pitch this to other podcasters, a special plugin for Netflix that skips to only each line so that you can get through all your content for all your podcasts as fast as possible.
This is my big Joe McMillan idea. This
you keep
is
the volume up
idea.
Or no? Are I'm you sorry? Hearing? Is the volume on?
So the volume's on. I have the subtitles on. But, you know, you basically just you skip ahead. And then if someone says a response to something that you didn't get, you skip back. You see what the question is. Then you skip ahead again. It's like just popping in and out of, you know, it's like this flash. I'm popping in and out of the speed force a little bit.
And Lenny, of course, you are our expert. You have watched the whole show. So could you briefly tell us, you know, for people who may not have seen the show, but are checking out this wonderful stream, either because they love Struggle Session or because they love Katie Halper, or because they're here for our wonderful charity, Snacks and Solidarity, make sure to hit them up. What's that Venmo, Jack?
The Venmo is at Solidarity and Snacks. I was out there with them today in Skid Row. They do really great work. You know, there's a lot of people that they helped with food and with all kinds of supplies today. So make sure to send your Venmos to at Solidarity and Snacks.
All right. So, Lenny, for people who may not have seen the show but are still checking this out, what's the broad brush stroke of what this show is about? What is Halt and Catch Fire about?
It's about these five people, Joe, Cameron, Donna, Gordon, and Boz, who come together in the very early days of the personal computer and the internet, and shows them working on various businesses and innovations over about a 10-year period. And you just follow how their relationships change, their business and personal relationships change over this span of time.
Yeah, Scratch Your Record just says we have raised $670.
That's why my jaw dropped while Lenny was speaking. I'm going to go
ahead. Also because of what Lenny was saying, which was
Because I was like, through the personal computer era?
Yeah, so this is a show, and really, when I didn't get this show at first, and YB was watching, I was like, because I also didn't get Mad Men either, because I couldn't figure out, like, what is the show about? It's about people who work at an ad agency. Like, is one of them like a vampire, or like, are they serial killer? Do
is
they time travel? Like, I didn't understand, like,
who's
what was
Mad
like
Man?
The premise?
Who's the Madman superhero?
Yes, yes. And Halt and Catch Fire kind of has a little bit of that, but ultimately what I did figure out watching it, especially the second season, that it is about these relationships and these characters and these people who go around inventing every single innovation that happened in the past in the height of, you know, the Silicon Valley era, but always get it stolen by somebody mm-hmm. richer, and they never trust each other enough, and they keep end up screwing
each other.
Can
I ask something? I know I'm not a host, I'm a guest, but can I just ask something? Are all of your opinions on Mad Men? Because I was reading about it, and a lot of people compared the show to Mad Men, and I want to know just because I actually really was thinking, like, it's not like Mad Men. It kind of is. It has a very, it's very period-based, right? Like, mm-hmm. time period-based. Although, we should talk about this, because I think that they really understate the 80s aesthetic for reasons we can get into. And I think it's a bit cowardly, honestly, if I'm being honest. I think it's a pretty big cop-out move. There's a lot of vanity in there. But I realize that the thing that's similar for me is that there's not one character I love similar to Mad Men, but I find this much more engaging. I stopped watching Mad Men. I don't remember how many seasons in, but I was just curious because do you guys like Mad Men? Do you think it's
so? Yeah, to be fair, I for some reason never completed Mad Men. I think I watched every season except for the last season.
I think maybe I did too.
But I did like Mad Men, and I do like Mad Men. I think Mad Men, you have to place all these things sort of in like the history of TV and sort of the recent history of prestige TV. And Mad Men was still kind of coming off of this like post Sopranos. It's also, you know, a Max, what the hell is his name? Matt Wiener. Matt Wiener show, you know, and he wrote for The Sopranos. That was kind of about like, you know, toxic men, you know what I mean? Toxic male anti-heroes or whatever. And so while I kind of agree that this and Mad Men both have the similarity that they're kind of just about people at work, and it's not the most sort of like plotty plot show, and it's more about the characters interacting with each other, which is something that I like. I think that maybe this like has a sort of more richness to it because it doesn't have just like, you know, the guy who's like a really fucked up fucker of a guy.
Yeah. And my thing with Mad Men is everyone pretends it's a critique, but most people either wanted to be Don Draper or wanted to date Don Draper. That's my theory.
Interesting.
Yeah. I got into this way more than I ever got into Mad Men. I like I said, I just realized I really did watch most of season 3 and season 4 just because like there's just something a lot more interesting about the characters in this show that just more like sucked me in. Even the characters like I dislike, like I don't like Cameron, but I think she's like a better TV villain for me than like anybody in Mad Men, you know, like I still like seeing her be like a piece of shit boss and like trying to watch Joe. I like how much Joe unravels her. I love to see it. So even the characters I dislike, I appreciate more than most of the characters that hooked me more than most of the characters in Mad Men did, even though I never really tried to watch it. And Lenny, so you're our TV expert. Where you weigh in on the Mad Men, Halt and Catch Fire comparison?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Mad Men, and I see the comparison, and I think that has a lot to do with sort of what Jack was saying of how you can like skip 10 seconds at a time, but I don't think it has the sort of extreme Mad Men aspect of where it will be like, you know, someone looks at a phone and that's the second act, you know, like it's actually really exciting to watch.
Yeah, and I really do think, I don't know if I expressed this clearly, but I do think that like the show pretends to be more of a critique, Mad Men, that is, pretends to be more of a critique than it is.
Yeah.
Like, I really think they do think Draper is cool.
Well, I'm not trying to, I don't want to like, you know, you do have to separate the art from the artist and everything.
Yeah,
like
I know.
That. But I, in some ways, it has affected my view of Mad Men that I heard the story, you know, that the head, you know, there was a female writer on the show who was like a very accomplished writer and wrote a lot of great episodes. And she outed Matthew Weiner as like late one night working on the show. He was to her like, you need to sleep with me, like you owe this to me. And I was like, oh,
he was just trying to develop.
You like
are
trying to be like Don Draper. You don't like think he sucks. You think that that's like the way a boss acts and like, you know, the way what an underling should be like or whatever. I was like, that kind of colors my opinion of Mad Men in a weird way.
That's what I felt like. And I don't have the analysis. Like, I don't have any, I couldn't explain why, but I definitely got that vibe. And I'm sure like film, you guys are real film people and TV people.
Oh, we're
but
filmers
like,
in a big way. Yeah.
There's something I'm sure that you could analyze, but it definitely felt like it was, and of course there's a difference between depiction and endorsement, but it felt like a closeted endorsement of Don Draper. Like
they make
Don
a little too
hiding.
Cool. They make him
yeah,
a little too cool.
Yeah. And, whereas I think with the characters in Halt and Catch Fire, there is a real complexity. I didn't feel like they were as like, I don't feel like the people who made the show either wanted to be Joe or were just like lusting after that character the way I got the sense with, and I want to say Matthew Weiner, that you brought a lot of shame on the Wesleyan community because we both went to Wesleyan. Did not overlap. He's older than me, obviously, but so yeah.
So we just mentioned it. It's the show is about the characters. So let's get into each one. We all have our different perspectives from our different seasons, but let's try, you know, to kind of piece it together. So let's start off with who I think is kind of maybe the antagonist of the show. For me personally, Cameron. What do y'all think about Cam? Killer Cam.
Well, do you guys agree that she's the antagonist?
I don't know if I agree with that necessarily. I think that like
my personal antagonist.
Well, that's Leslie's personal antagonist. Right. I think honestly, I look at the show and I'm like, you know, every character. I mean, I only watched season three and I watched it with my 10-second method. But you know, I do feel like every character. We're talking about Cameron. I like Cameron, to be honest with you. Cameron's like impossible, but you know, is a sort of like this type of genius I feel like we see portrayed on television, but I think that this is maybe the version that's been portrayed that I've seen with the most humanity, you know, we've seen so much of the sort of distant, you know, genius who is very focused on their work. But Cameron, I do kind of, it feels like a person, you know, and I don't necessarily agree that Cameron is the antagonist. I think that maybe, well, maybe capitalism itself is the antagonist.
At the end of the day.
I literally can say that about every show.
Of course.
Made in America.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Leslie, your personal antagonist is Cameron. And Jack and Lenny, do you guys have a personal antagonist?
Well, I just want to talk about Cameron first.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to challenge. You see, I'm a Cameron. I'm just blowing shit up. You know? And like you're like Bosworth, Leslie, who I really like. But Cameron, okay, let's talk about Cameron. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what I like about Cameron, which also probably makes her like pretty hateable, but I feel like a lot of the time when you can sense that someone is like the self-insert for like the creative making it, it comes across very like just sort of having a chip on your shoulder and just like making everyone who's against their creative vision just like an obvious straw man and like they're always right. And I like that Halt and Catch Fire acknowledges how, you know, how awful it can be when corporations or whatever are trying to control you and inhibit your artistic vision. And at the same time is very often like Cameron is being a petulant child. Like, yeah. And I really like that complexity in it.
Yeah, I do like that Cameron is like impossible, you know, and that there really is like no way this person, like there's no way to win. Like whichever side you kind of stake out, like Cameron will kind of find the value in the opposite side. It's Cameron's a frustrating character.
Yeah, I liked also how like I appreciated her aesthetic. I feel like this aesthetic isn't really like used in most film in most shows. Like I feel like if it's as mainstream as this, then they don't really try to go for people who kind of buck the gender norms. And I think that she, you know, of course there's some like model chic thing going on, but I kind of like what a slob she was and how she really had short hair and not short hair in like the very cutesy way.
She does have a punk slobcore aesthetic, and I, of course, appreciate that.
Yeah. But I think part of the reason it's so hard for me to keep focus on one character is because I think, Lenny, you were speaking to this, which is that, like, they are very complex. So my loyalties kind of like shift back and forth, which I don't experience that much. I usually like really just like certain characters and dislike certain characters. I think Gordon is kind of constantly annoying, but even that is somewhat endearing. Like he's such an annoying, like stick in the mud, but that has its charm also.
Kate said that I was most like Gordon, and in watching the show, I was like, oh, I get it. And it's not in a way that I like so much.
All right. So let's talk about Gordon, old Sag Sack himself. Yeah. Who would be, you know, such a sweetheart. Like he would be like the character you automatically would root for, but he's like kind of an asshole too a lot of the times and he's fucks
like
up
a very particular and prickly person, there's a lot of Reynolds Woodcock in Gordon, you know, and it's like, again, it's just like over like some stupid shit a lot of the time. Like that's why when I kind of looked at watched Gordon, I was like, man, this guy like gets a little too like frustrated about stupid shit, yeah. Which I can identify with. Yeah.
And a little self-pitying and grandiose.
Yes.
Which is annoying. Yeah. But I haven't seen him look like this. I've only seen the first season, you know, because I really like to go deep depth over a breath. So yeah, I wish the first season.
I wish we did get this contract nailed a little bit earlier, because it would be worth looking at all the different facial hair and hairstyles, because every season it changes pretty radically, at least for the guys. It does. At one point, Joe gets he goes for like full Steve Jobs, which kind of worked a little bit for him. But this is Gordon. When he gets nice and clean with the mustache. I like him with the beard,
but also,
too.
Sorry.
Lenny, what did you think of old Gordo?
Yeah, I think I really like him. Cameron and Donna are definitely my favorites, but I like that Gordon is often like the voice of reason with other people. Like he gives good advice, then isn't as good at just being himself.
Totally, yeah.
But absolutely anything he tries to do is a complete disaster. That is perfect.
I gotta say, I kind of like Joe. Is there anything else I should say about? Well, first of all, he looks a lot like Steve Carell. Who does he look like there? Not himself.
He does look like Steve Carell.
Kind of like Javier Bardem.
Yeah, this is an odd picture. I probably need to get a bit better
Harry
picture
Potter
from
guy.
My boy up there.
I think here's what I was saying though before, which is that there is, while I appreciated to some extent Cameron's aesthetic, they're very tame. They don't really embrace the 80s. They don't want to go there because they know it's ugly. It's ugly clothing, right? And so, like, they don't commit. Gordon is kind of close. Donna is, but it's in a very hipstery way. But Joe is really not 80s. And I just don't appreciate how much they're trying to tone it down. Mm. I think it's cowardly. I do. I think it's not. They're being... They're not being
you think
being
everybody needed to look like a fucking goofball on this show.
A little bit more goofballish. Like he wore like normal. There was nothing 80s about his ties or anything for Joe. Unless he's supposed to be the future even in like how he dresses, but I don't think so.
He's supposed to be like a fashion innovator as well as a So Joe, I do like Joe a lot. He's definitely my favorite character. He is the typical bad boy character, but he never wins is the thing, right? He actually like fucks up and has principles sometimes for no particular reason. He never seems to able to hold on to anything he does, even though he is the guy who like really puts it all together. Like he steals all their ideas, but they weren't going to do anything with him. I love Joe. Like I wish they had like if they had trusted him and believed in him and took it as word and listened to him, I think everyone would have probably ended up happier on the whole. Like I think Joe, even though he's out for himself, but he's like out to make like $1 billion and he's got that drive and he's got that passion. Just attach yourself to that rocket ship. It'll take you straight up. Yeah, but Cameron's like, I want to make my little 2D games, and Gordon's like, Gordon, I don't even know what Gordon or Donna really want. Like,
Gordon
they
just
definitely
wants to fuck
should
around with the ham radio.
Yeah, like
I did like how good Joe was with the kids, with the daughters, with Gordon and Donna's daughters. I like that scene.
Well, But I did want to mention, since I did have season two, this is my special season two hot take. The kids basically more or less disappear for most of season two. They're barely in it, except for one time one of the girls kind of runs away and they see the Gordon get in a fight. But the kids kind of do disappear a little bit in season two. Yeah.
But that doesn't take away what they had with Joe. It doesn't take away from how good Joe is with them.
You know, Joe would be a good dad. Yeah. You know, Joe would be a good dad.
Yeah,
I mean, kind of a sociopathic dad, but like in other ways, good. Probably better uncle than dad.
Probably yes, exactly, Kay. You have it exactly right.
I like Joe actually, and I was kind of, you know, I had only watched season three, and so I kind of at the start of the season was feeling like, oh, this man is the villain or whatever. Basically, just because like I like Gordon, and Gordon is always talking about, you know, how he stole the idea or whatever.
But, and Gordon is lying about that, Jack, by the way. Gordon is full of shit.
That's what's so great about Joe, not watching any the full season.
Joe Kane, maybe Lenny, you can adjudicate, but my opinion is that Joe came to Gordon and said, hey, let's do this. I have a big thing. And Gordon's like, no, I'm going to move to California and be with my wife. And then Joe's like, okay, I'll move to California too. Let's do this. And Gordon's like, no, I'm sad. Bye.
No.
And then he reads in the newspaper that Joe has made like $1 million selling this idea that he put up together. And then he spends all of season three like mad at Joe because he didn't listen to Joe. Joe called him, said, get in on this.
Well, and as I said, I started the season kind of thinking like, oh, this guy is, you know, almost like a huckster guy or something. And, you know, this season three includes, you know, this character Ray becoming sort of like another Gordon to him or something like that. And they're blue skying ideas together. But yeah, I actually do kind of agree with you. These like programmer guys, it almost like indicts that kind of, you know, like you feel like, didn't Steve Jobs make some complaints like this that everything was stolen from him? Or I guess Wozniak kind of did. It's almost like an indictment of that as well, where it's like, yes, you like looked up NSFnet or whatever, but I told you to look up NSFnet and I figured out what it all was. And you sort of put together the information about it. And then, yeah, like you said, Leslie, and I like this, like he tells people to fuck off. And like, you know, the there's a part in the third
Gordon
season
or Joe.
Joe. Okay. Like, you know, in the third season, there's this sequence where like, you know, someone who like represents 33% of the company's like billing or something like that. You know, his son came to a party at Joe's and like did coke and crashed his car. But then the guy comes in to make good. But then the guy is a shithead and he's a homophobe and everything is going to be all good. But Joe can't help himself but be like, fuck you. Your wife hates you. Your son hates you.
Yeah.
I kind of like that shit. I also like that this man's like, he's like a little kooky and like he is like, he's not just a huckster guy. Like he's like an artist or something. Matthew Lillard is so good as the other boss at McMillan Utilities.
By the way, he see in that picture of him where he doesn't look like Steve Jobs in that picture. He really looks like Steve Carell playing Steve Jobs in that picture. Not this picture, but the other one.
Hopefully that's a more handsome picture
of
him. I actually want to say like it was actually kind of hard to get graphics and stuff for this because this show is really like kind of really underappreciated. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get recaps for each season, but AMC stopped doing the recaps after season two. Like really.
That's where Jack comes in with the 10 second approach. Yeah.
Yeah.
But gotta do the 10 second method.
This show is really unappreciated. And again, I want to thank Kate and Joan for kind of highlighting the show because, as I said, I was kind of skeptical of this show, but this show really kind of won me over. And, you know, Joe is a big part of it. I love his journey. I really think, you know, not to spoil anything for Katie and Jack, who haven't seen
it.
Yeah. But, you know, I really do like his whole, you know, journey and where he ends up. And I'm pretty happy for him. By the end of the series, what did you think of the ending for Joe? Since we do end the series on him, we start and finish it with him.
I saw some good takes in chat. I just wanted to share one earlier I liked, and I haven't seen all the episodes, But I love this idea. Dash 7 said, I think every character gets a season like where they're the protagonist and one where they're the antagonist.
Which
I think is an interesting, you know, I haven't seen the seasons, but, you know, I'll keep that in mind as I rewatch it. And then I also like this Mall Weasel take with, I think Joe projects an ideal image and then people end up projecting their hopes onto him. And he's simply not prepared for that responsibility.
Oh, that's a great take.
I think also that's very well sort of highlighted in season 3 with the relationship with this Ray character and all that goes on with that, that I don't want to spoil.
Lenny, of all the seasons, none of them captures it for Jack as much as the one season he saw.
Lenny, break down Joe for us. Who is Joe? What does Joe want?
Joe sort of started off as the one I like the least. And I think probably still is, but it's like closer. I'm like more. I like Joe more each time I watch it.
You dislike him less each time you watch it.
No, I like genuinely like Joe. It's like the kind of show where like my least favorite character on Halt and Catch Fire would be my favorite character on a different show. But I think sort of like what makes it hard to get into Joe at first is he almost feels like the like Trojan horse they needed to like get the show made. Like, if you're going to make a show about sad nerds, there needs to be this like cool badass guy in there. But I think one of the things that makes Joe stand out a lot from other like cool badass protagonists is definitely his sexuality. And I think they do really interesting stuff with that. And that is sort of my ideal show, is like a bunch of characters I love and then anyone I like less is queer. I think Joe is exactly what you guys were saying, that he sort of presents as like so cool and great and larger than life that you do sort of attach to him, and he always tells you what you want to hear. You know, he tells Gordon and Cameron what geniuses they are when no one else will, which kind of ruins their relationships with everyone who's not Joe and is not telling them those things. And then, yeah, like you said, he can't live up, which can make him seem like a sort of grifter or make him seem just like a human with vulnerabilities, depending on like how you look at it.
Can we talk about one scene in particular? I know we're doing it by character. Okay, maybe I'm a little slow. That scene where he seduces this guy, so I'm only in season 1. So we learn about his relationship with that artist who's a man. And
yeah, I really like
moving.
That. Yeah, I really like that episode. That was a really great episode.
But before that, there's another scene where we learn that, you know, well, we see him making out with a guy. But I couldn't really tell. And that to me, though, didn't seem like anything but transactional. Like he was trying to get this woman. Here's what I don't really get. He doesn't like this woman who's a potential, going to buy the business. I'm so bad at computers and business. So this is a great scene for me to talk about. But she has this like male plaything. Is that right? Or are they in a relationship, or is she like, are they sleeping together? This woman,
someone mentioned in the chat that is a boy toy. I haven't seen that episode yet, but they did mention that. But somebody did mention that they liked that show, that episode where Joe fucks the rich lady's boy toy is what they said in the chat.
Right. Okay. Cause I was just confused if we were supposed to think that he was, I couldn't tell if he was her like a boy toy, and there was an added layer where we were supposed to think that he wasn't into women, which adds another layer of it, or that part maybe just wasn't clear. We don't really know if he's into women. Maybe he's into women and men. I'm talking about the boy toy, not Joe. But I like that they did that, and then that they did a more, like a realer relationship that different.
I really
like the range.
Sort of the first time it comes up, it seems like he's bisexual, like largely out of spite. Like, when it's convenient.
an opportunistic way. But then you're like, oh no, this is different. And so even his sexuality, it's like runs the gamut from being like transactional and opportunistic to actually, you know, based on more. With Cameron too, right?
Kate just said in the chat, isn't it transsexual with Cameron too? Yes.
Well, I've only seen the first one, but I do feel like he falls in love with her. in season one.
Well, let's talk about this. We're running close on time. We will get to our other two characters, but let's talk about the Joe Donna situationship. Joe Cameron situationship that's going on throughout the series. I never really bought the. I really liked them. Bought them more as enemies than as like a couple ever. You know, I really just didn't think that those two personalities could ever be happy with one another in any real way.
Well, I think in season one, which I don't think you saw, right? Which is fine. No. I'm not calling out anyone, but you did not see it?
No, I saw some of it, just some.
Okay, you saw some of it. So I feel like in season one, it goes from being like an annoying relationship that's just like physical and kind of cliched to actually, okay, I see it. Like, I think that they're in love on some level. But then there's this moment where he touches a current and she touches him. Do you know, is this right, Lenny? As the person who's actually seen the whole thing. Like, he touches a plug. And he's like he's getting electrocuted. But I think there actually is something there. Like, it's not just a dance that he's doing. And then she touches him and they, like, get really aroused. And I was like, no, this has got to stop. Like, what is happening? This is so corny because it's about being like how they're turned on. That was like, I don't know if they let some like person write that scene in, like they lost a bet or something. But besides that, I like their interaction towards the end. And I like that scene with the, when you learn about his past with that artist. I thought it was very clever. Maybe this was like over the top and not at all nuanced and hammering us over the head. But I like that scene where you think, where you get to hear what he's saying to the guy who's sick, and you think that, and then she sees them from the behind, you know, she's turning around, sees them, and from her angle, it looks like they're having a more sexual interaction, but really it's a, like friends interaction where he finds out he's dying. I really like that scene too.
Oh yeah, with his ex-boyfriend, right? Yeah. That designs the computer room. Yeah, that was a really good episode. Yeah. So moving on.
Such a metaphor. Oh,
I got
for
one more
we...
Gordon yeah. thing, and this is, you know, also from the wonderful season three. Or no, not Gordon, sorry, Joe, also from the wonderful season three, which is the handling of, you know, this is like actually something that does sort of put it in the 80s, maybe more than other moments in the show. There's a scene where a guy just shows up to his house, and I find out from looking online, because I looked it up, that he has never appeared in the show before, and he shows up like in tears, and we don't know what the hell is going on. And then, you know, Joe gets a call later, basically telling him that he does not have HIV after, you know, being exposed, basically. And, you know, I just thought this was like a very cool, you know, kind of just plunked right in the middle of all the plotty, you know, stuff. And it is a very sort of character moment. That was like it was, you know, a very effective couple of scenes there. There in the middle of season three.
We should have another convention where we've all, where seen Lenny's the whole not thing. The only person who's seen the whole
thing. All right, moving on to next character, Donna. Lenny, I did not get Donna. I watched most of the show. I still don't understand Donna. Can you please explain Donna to me?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you didn't get her watching it, I'm not going to promise that you ever will. Because for me, it was definitely immediate how much I cared about her. But yeah, I really, I like how much she changes over the show. And I think this is what's really impressive about Halt and Catch Fire in general, is that it is 40 episodes, but people change so much, but it doesn't feel... it doesn't feel rushed.
They time jump. They time jump in the show very well.
And yeah, it just feels so different from most TV because, you know, compared to like how much has like Olivia Benson changed and we've been watching her since 1999, you know? But yeah, I think they do this almost cliche sort of story of her like becoming more empowered and independent in a way that I felt like didn't feel patronizing to me and felt pretty organic and genuine. So that's what I liked about it.
Yeah, I guess the thing I didn't get is like it was a good like as far if you're going to do a lean in story, this is one of the least like offensive and neoliberal ones you can do because they keep getting screwed over by richer company. But I guess my thing was like her main thing was that she was just really good at like work and her job. And I didn't know what else was there to that character. I struggled with it. Katie, did you what? Maybe I is because I missed season one. What did you see in about Donna in season one?
Well, what I liked about her is that she was so like she had such a housewife like aesthetic and also personality, but also worked. Like she had such a which I thought was an interesting contrast that you don't really see. Like she was just very much like you wouldn't predict based on the beginning because of how much she was. I mean, what am I saying though? In real life, obviously this happens all the time. Both the man and the woman will work in certain couples, right? They're both high powered.
But on TV tropes and stuff, you don't.
You see that usually on TV, it's either like she stays at home and takes care of the kids or she's like cutthroat, like the husband. But in this, she wasn't really cutthroat, but she was she was a genius, as much of a genius, if not more, as Gordon was. Which, like, you didn't get the sense, I didn't get the sense of that at all at the very beginning. Like, I thought it was going to be very much about a man pursuing his dreams and his vision and his,
nagging wife, yeah, yelling exactly. at him right. to come take care of the kids.
Right. Yeah, especially because, Lenny, sorry, yeah.
Oh, I sort of think what's so interesting about Donna is it takes this thing we kind of throw around as a cliche a lot of like women can't have it all,
right.
Which is usually portrayed in such a like simplistic way, which is why it's such a like pitchy cliche thing. But like when you're watching Donna's storyline, you're like, oh, like I get it. Like having kids does actually really change a woman's life. And like they're actually dramatizing this instead of sort of simplifying it like so many things do.
Right. Yeah. Like you got the sense, it wasn't like overly, it was just like made it like, oh, this is something that happens and it's complex, but it wasn't one extreme or the other. It was like Gordon's not as good or as present as she is, but it's not like a total abandonment, like damsel in distress thing, nor is it a total egalitarian relationship, which I think,
Yeah, I would say more about the Donna Gordon relationship, but Katie, you haven't seen the rest of the show, but this is probably where, you have the biggest drama in the show. But this relationship, if you want to pull your headphones off, for a second.
Tell me, so go like just go wave when you're done. Okay.
I'm done. All right. So Lenny, of course, we got to talk about Gordon's death, which takes place over three seasons, one of the most excruciating things on TV to watch. You have, he's kind of a jerk, but he still is like the most vulnerable of all these characters. And then they make him sick, and then they make you watch him like get it really hard stuff to watch. And it really is so dissonant from like the other things that are happening in the show sometimes, because most of the time it's just like Cameron and Joe making fuck eyes at each other, and Gordon's just like, hey, I'm just over here. No, I'm fine, guys. Don't worry about me. And he's like going in fugue states and shit, like absolutely gut-wrenching to see over time. But really, like good TV. What did you think about, that arc, that very sad arc for a poor Gordon?
Yeah, I think that worked really well. And as funny, it is almost this thing of like, if it's the season finale or the series finale and they need a dramatic death and you're the only straight white man on the show, like watch out because they're going to be thinking about the optics. But I think it worked really well. And I think it was a good ending for Donna because they kept the relationship close and they always mattered to each other. And you get a little bit of in the one of the episodes towards the end, one of her daughters is like, why do you care? Like you couldn't stand each other. And you got that, you definitely got that from them, but you're left with the feeling of how much they mattered to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're gonna bring Katie back on. Before we talk about, I think maybe
was that a wave?
Yes, that was a wave.
We're gonna talk
about the fan favorite, maybe most people's favorite character.
Oh, sure.
Boz.
Does he come back after? Oh, good. He does come back. Okay.
Oh, he's
oh
it,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay,
oh, they had to keep Boz around.
He's
had
my
to
favorite.
Keep Boz around.
Yeah.
I think he's almost everybody's favorite character. Just, you gotta love him. Just a raw bone Texas badass who has like a good heart too. He's really probably the only, maybe the only character in the show you can really say has a heart of gold. And he's the one that
covered
goes to prison.
Coal,
he's the one
coal,
that goes
yeah.
to prison for Cameron, by the way. I actually think that's the main thing I don't like about Cameron is that she got Boz sent to prison and then didn't go in herself.
Didn't break him out.
She deserved to go in herself, but Boz went in by did the time by himself, didn't snitch. And I just didn't feel like she really took care of him.
But
right
I think
way
he wanted to do, he really instigated it.
Yeah, yeah, but
she, as the younger, healthier person, shouldn't have let him take the hit. But he also did, right? Am I right that he like ordered the cops to physically batter Joe?
Oh, I guess somebody is mentioning that. Remember, he had the cops beat up Joe, then he goes to prison for Cam. What
like,
a character!
Yeah, he beat him up. He had him beaten up.
That is fucked up. I forgot about that.
So yeah, I mean I'm not, look, people are complex, you know.
Prison did rehabilitate him. He did come out better.
No, but he came out, he was already good, because remember, to be fair, he had Joe beaten up by, I'm sure, extremely racist, you know, police brutalizing cops. Maybe this was like a little bit of a equalizing agenda, like we'll have a white victim. Right. And
but he's bisexual. So now
right.
you're bringing
yeah.
up.
See? Yes. But I don't think he knew that. And in fact, later on, in season
I think it
one,
counts.
When he has that guy in the strip joint, in the strip club, who says, "You weren't smiling at any of these ladies. What are you, a queer?" Boz punches him in the face in defense of Joe's honor.
Yeah, yeah. I will say, Katie, Boz has another woke moment when one of the coders ends up is gay, and he's just like, "Well, all right."
he's woke Boz.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Lenny, what do you think of Boz?
Yeah, I love Boz. Now you guys are mentioning that he does have more complexities, but I was thinking he's sort of the one that it's sort of easy to be like, "Oh, he's just Boz. He's great."
fun.
Compared to the others. Yeah, it's delightful seeing him. It was weird because I watched a bunch of King of the Hill right before my latest rewatch. And sometimes you're like, "Oh, that's Khan." And it's very weird. Yeah, he's great. Slight spoiler, but I do love that he's a trophy husband.
Took my thing out. Tell me, is spoiler done?
Yeah, it's done.
Yes, okay, yeah. And Boz does kind of end up being, even though this is a show of beautiful people, Boz is probably the one with, you know, that really is the sex symbol of the show, if I'm being honest with you.
Hmm. My lesbian roommate just tweeted about how hot Boz is, actually. It transcends everything.
That's interesting, yeah. Huh.
So we were talking about these beautiful people.
He is
people.
Transcendent. He truly is. Yeah. And that's a good, that's what he gets for being, for his allyship. It's the least that the world could give him.
Yeah. So I do want to bring up, let me see if I can get the slide right up here, because I found this amazing picture of like the real people who like this show is based
yeah,
on.
How, so, I want to know exactly how much is real and not real.
Well, so it's not technically the exact same people because it's not based on any particular person. It's based on the era.
Right.
But if you want to look at this.
Oh no,
this is,
I don't know if I want.
This is Sierra Online, a video game company. They made adventure games, you know, as you can see, women prominent in it. And this is, you know, this is how they were. This is their fashion.
Well, exactly. And they don't have the courage to have the people dressed like that on the show. But
yeah, yeah, fun stuff. I remember my dad as a businessman early in the 80s dressing like this, the white tie. All this, very interesting times in Texas. I like that. We didn't talk about this earlier, but I really like that the show is set in Texas during this era that most people don't know about, this big boom that around the Houston, Dallas area that really changed the landscape of Texas. And it even, I'm from Louisiana, it bled over to there too, not in any kind of good way or anything. We have a bunch of tech companies, we have like oil companies and like refineries and stuff, but you know, it really captures I think fairly well this part of, you know, history that's mostly forgotten or not really talked about. And really this part of history is just like how the forces of capitalism kind of shaped our modern world in ways that just were meant to make it worse and worse and make more and more money off of us.
Yeah, it does have a real social, I mean, I was thinking this earlier, something that you said, Jack, but it kind of does have a real socialist ethos to it, right? Because it really does show how if people united came together, they would be able to defeat, it's like this ruthless, self-absorbed, self-centered pursuit of self-interest is actually self-defeating.
Yeah, and I mean, also just, kind of yeah. shows that, you know, these structures and sort of the desire to be successful in this kind of, you know, world, you know, sets you people against going? Each other and makes like friends and people who love each other, like stab each other to death.
Yeah. I think Leslie is having a fight right now over there.
No, I think he's saying we got to get be done. I think.
No, I'm checking with the balls. I'm checking with balls over there. I want balls to come and kick my ass. All right. You know, got to make sure we're running on time. Yeah. But this has been an absolutely wonderful panel. So we will start, you know, get wrapping up here, giving our final thoughts. But before we do, reminder, this is a cause. This is for Solidarity and Snacks. The Venmo's right there on the bottom of your screen at Solidarity and Snacks, a wonderful organization. And Jack, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, your work with them when you visited them?
What did I do? Well, this week, last week and this week, I made 80 sandwiches. I made 80 turkey and cheddar sandwiches on white bread. And this week I went and down to, you know, they basically do a noon, mutual aid effort every Saturday where they give out things like, you know, masks and, soap and everything like that, as well as food. You know, we gave out turkey and cheese sandwiches. They were giving out Metro cards that were preloaded with like $5, you know. It's all in sort of community. It's all in concert with the community there who they know and have built relationships with. And so that, you know, the people in the community kind of help set up and run security and everything like that. And it's just a line of people for 30, 45 minutes, just handing out goods and food and stuff.
All right. That's great. So thank you all so much for joining us. You can find us on Struggle Session at patreon.com/strugglesession or sesh.plus. Katie, where can people find you?
The Katie Helper Show on YouTube. So youtube.com/the Katie Helper Show, Patreon, patreon.com/the Katie Helper Show, and Useful Idiots, which is now at Substack. So usefulidiots.substack.com. Sorry about that.
All right. Thank you. And Lenny, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Lenny Burnham, and you can find my podcast, Chapter Surfing, on Apple Podcasts.
And Jack, of course, where can people find you?
Oh, on Struggle Session and Jack AM, you know, Struggle Session at sesh.plus and at Jack AM at twitch.tv/Jack AM.
All right.
And Sunday nights, Katie Halper Show.
Katie Halper Show. Every Thursday, Katie Halper Show. Everyone, thank you so much.
Thank you. Halt and Catch.
Halt and Catch Con. Thank you. Peace.
Thanks for having us.
Bye.
Thank you.